Blog Talk Radio.
We interrupt our programming for this special news bulletin live from New York. Reports are coming in as we speak, confirming the absence of pilots, co-pilots, and many passengers from the wreckage of many airline disasters. And now a report from Chicago.
Drivers have also mysteriously disappeared from their cars, resulting in literally hundreds of auto accidents all across the country, many of which have been fatal. But worst of all, families have awakened to find their young children missing. Missing without a trace.
I agree. Our country is in a state of total chaos at this time. Let's turn our attention to Los Angeles.
Panic is setting into the hearts of people worldwide, not just in the United States. We're receiving reports from Japan and other Eastern countries who are experiencing the same horrors as they awake this morning.
Authorities are continuing to investigate the cause of this disappearance of millions of people worldwide. Excuse me, ma'am. Can you give us your thoughts on the events of today?
The only possible explanation I can give you is what my missing husband often spoke of, and that was Jesus Christ, the Son of God, would return someday. And now I can only hope and pray that God will have mercy on us that remain. I wish we'd all been ready.
Trampled on the floor. I wish we'd all been ready. The children died, the days grew cold, a piece of bread, goodbye, a bag of gold. I wish we'd all been ready. And there's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind. A man and wife asleep in bed. She hears a noise and turns her head. He's gone. I wish we'd all been ready. Two men walking up a hill. One disappears, and one left standing still. I wish we'd all been ready. There's no time to change your mind. The sun has come, and you've been left behind.
Oh yeah. Father spoke, the demons died. How could you have been so blind? There's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind. No, and there's no time to change your mind. The sun has come and you've been left behind. I hope we'll all be. You've been left behind. I hope we'll all be. You've been left behind. I hope we'll all be. You've been left behind.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Reaching Out Radio. My name is Chadwick Harvey. I will be your host tonight. as we continue to lift up Montel in our prayers. We have been on a 12-week journey. This is the fourth week, and if you've missed the first 3 weeks, we're going on a study on God's prophetic timeline. And what I'd like to do for the new listeners and also for the people who've been with us for all 3 weeks, now within our fourth week, I'd like to do a quick summary of the previous weeks, the chapters that we've done, that will lead us into tonight's chapter, which is Daniel 8, and we'll also get to Daniel 9 as well. So we began this journey, the prophetic timeline of God, in Isaiah 66, 8 through 24. It is the scripture that kind of gives us the summarized timeline of the events that will occur in a summary way, so that we understand where we are on God's prophetic timeline. So again, in Isaiah 66, 8, it proclaims the 1948 prophecy, which is when Israel became a nation again. And then it continues down its path, and it hints at the 1967 prophecy, okay, in the next verse. And then it continues down, and it says, when you see this, you know, when you see these things, and it gives a vivid description of Messiah's second coming, which we can find in Zechariah 14, in Revelation 14, and also in Revelation 19, 11 through 16. So it's a summarized timeline of, hey, this is the marker, this is the pinpoint of when all of these end of the age prophecies are going to be fulfilled according to the prophets. So 1948 is the cornerstone, it's the foundation that begins this process. So then we also explored Psalms 102, 16 through 18. And the psalmist tells us in the scripture that when the Lord builds up Zion, which is Jerusalem, he will appear in his glory. And he continues to say, this is written for the terminal generation. We have to go to the Hebrew word, acheron is the Hebrew word. And that means terminal or last generation. So when the 1967 prophecy occurs, which obviously it occurred in 1967 when the children of Israel recaptured Jerusalem as their capital, then it, according to the prophet, he says the Lord will appear in his glory. Okay, so now we're on this timeline. We have the 1948 prophecy. Now we have the 1967 prophecy. And just like Isaiah said, hey, when you see this, you know, get prepared because the Lord's going to come with fire and brimstone and all of the imagery that we find in Zechariah 14, Revelation 14, and Revelation 19. So we have the markers of 1948, 1967, and then at the end, a second coming. I mentioned, I believe in the first week, that if we have a piece of paper, we can draw a graph, and we can put the 1948 prophecy on the very left, then 1967, and then leave this length of space in and then put the second coming, the millennial reign, the new Jerusalem, because it will occur in that order. So in between the 1967 prophecy and Messiah's second coming, well, a lot of these events that we find in the biblical prophets will be fulfilled during that time. Okay, we have been focused on Daniel's prophecies of his kingdoms that will come to fruition, that will be fulfilled during that time between 1967 and the second coming. Okay, so he wrote about these kingdoms in half of his book. Okay, and in week two, we went through Daniel 2, which is Nebuchadnezzar's statue dream. Okay, and we identified who these four kingdoms are. And he mentioned them as metal components. Okay, he gave this imagery of metal components, of gold, of silver, of bronze, and iron. So if you are keeping up with this, writing this down so it can all, once we get finished with it, it'll line up absolutely perfectly. The gold is Babylon, which Daniel tells us that it is Babylon. And then he says these kingdoms will be in sequence, okay? So the first one is Babylon, just like he said, that Babylon is the head of gold. And then through history, we can understand which ones came after, which is Medo-Persia is the silver, which is Iran. Grecian is the bronze, which is Turkey. And then we identified that the Antichrist kingdom is the iron. Okay, so then last week, we went through Daniel 7. Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 are brother chapters, okay, meaning that they're talking about the same kingdoms. Okay, so we could look at them. They're just different in symbolatry and different in how he goes about the prophecy as far as Daniel 2 is the metal components, and Daniel 7, he speaks of beasts, of animals. So Daniel 7, if you're writing this down, the lion is Babylon. Okay, we confirmed last week that the lion represents Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar and even with Saddam Hussein of recent, before he got the throne. The lion represents Babylon. Most biblical scholars and prophecy teachers will agree with that, that the lion represents Babylon, which again is Iraq. Okay, the bear that we mentioned is Medo-Persia, which is Iran. Okay, again, they're going to be in sequence. So we're seeing this pattern of Babylon, Iraq, Medo-Persia, Iran. The third one, the leopard, is Grecian again, and that is Turkey. And then we identified the fourth beast. Okay, and it's very important to understand he had 10 horns. Okay, so we know that this fourth beast is the same beast as Revelation 13's one beast. Okay, Revelation 13 speaks of one beast that rose that had 10 horns, and Daniel 7's fourth beast had 10 horns. So they're the same beast. So then we identified this as the Antichrist kingdom, and it tells us that it was a conglomerate, okay, of the lion, the bear, and the leopard, meaning that the Antichrist kingdom consists of Babylon, Persia, and Greece, which is Turkey, okay? So it's telling us that it will be a conglomerate empire, okay, the Antichrist kingdom, and it shows us where it's going to be located. And we identified that last week with the 10 kings, where they were. We identified three of them, which is Egypt, Libya, and Sudan, okay? Daniel 11, 40 through 45 will tell you that. And we keep on going to where we understand the land area that the Antichrist kingdom will be. Okay, so this week we'll kind of go on top of this, okay, on top of all of the kingdoms that we've just learned about through the past couple of weeks. And it will tell us more information on the Antichrist kingdom, the four more of the kings, if you will. We know three of them. It'll go into four more in Daniel 8. We'll also know which region that the Antichrist will come out of. Okay, so that's a big topic of today. I think when you look at the internet or anywhere else, I mean, there's all kind of interesting stuff as far as, you know, everywhere in the world, so to speak. So the prophets didn't leave any of this to chance, okay? They told us exactly where the Antichrist will rise from. They even called him by name, okay? And we'll eventually get into that as the weeks progress. But this week we'll go over Daniel 8, which is basically the second and the third kingdom will have a major war, okay? And the third kingdom obviously will win that war because they'll go into power. And then it gives us a detailed roadmap through the rest of the age, if you will. And I tell people this, you know, jokingly, but also seriously, that they can take Daniel 8 and they can tear it out, put it on their refrigerator and whatever it may be, their bathroom window, mirror, whatever it may be, because this is, as we will prove next week, I believe this is where our generation is looking at right now. So I'm giving you a little hint for next week, but next week we will definitely understand where our generation is. We just have to lay the foundation first. We have to understand who these kingdoms are, how they were going to rise and fall, and then we can look at the Middle East and say, okay, do these correlate with the prophets? Okay, instead of trying to plug them in ourselves, we need to understand the biblical prophets, and then we can go to the Middle East and North Africa and say, okay, do these match perfectly? And in my opinion, they match absolutely perfectly, and we will find that out next week. So I hope you'll join us. Before we begin, always remember you can find if you've missed an episode on this, at Reaching Out Radio. Okay, and also on my website as well, faithfulperformance.com. We are going through each chapter of the book that I've written, which is God's Prophetic Timeline, Messiah's Final Warning. Okay, it's not a date-setting book. I think if you've joined us up to these weeks and continue, you will never hear me set dates, but you will see me confirm the dates that have been fulfilled. Okay, so that we can just kind of follow these kingdoms along to their ultimate fulfillment. So with that being said, let's begin with Daniel 8. And before we begin, I'd like to say a quick prayer if we may. Father, I just want to thank you for all your many blessings. Thank you for blessing this radio broadcast and all the people who are listening to it. I just pray that you guide us and direct us with your wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Pour out your understanding among your people. We are your people. Help us to understand what your biblical prophets are saying to us in our time. We're two or more gathered in your name. You are there amongst us. We love you with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. In Messiah's name, amen, amen, and amen. Okay, so let's begin with Daniel 8. Again, Daniel 8 is one of my favorite chapters because it speaks of this great war that's going to occur between these two kingdoms, okay? And it tells us who these kingdoms are. Again, like I've always stated, they didn't need me. The Lord didn't ask me what my opinion was about this. They tell us who these people are, who these empires are. Daniel 2 has an interpretation. Daniel 7 has an interpretation. Daniel 8 has an interpretation. You know, most of these books do, or they have a clear reference in the biblical prophets of who these people are. For instance, I'll give you a great example. We'll be discovering who Mystery Babylon is. Okay, well, everybody tries to guess that. Well, guess what? Isaiah tells us who it is. I'm not going to tell you right now because I want you to join our podcast, but Isaiah tells us exactly who Mystery Babylon is, and so we're not trying to plug in, you know, all of these other names out there that it's just incredible. So always remember, please remember that the Lord has not left anything for secret. He didn't speak in secret, and it's up to us to search the scriptures to find the correlations between the scriptures if there is no interpretation. Okay, so we'll begin with Daniel 8, and what we'll do is we'll read through the prophecy, and then we'll go to the interpretation from the angel Gabriel. And I'll stop in between here and kind of, you know, set our mindset right. So once we get to the interpretation, we kind of have an idea of what's going on. So in Daniel 8, 1 through 3, I'll summarize this. Daniel had a vision. Okay, he had a vision, and his vision took him to Iran. Okay, Elam, okay, that you'll see in your Bible in verse 3. Or in verse 2, I'm sorry, that is Iran. Okay, so that is what's talked modern-day Iran, Persia, back in the day. Okay, so he had a vision in Iran, so we need to put our mindset that we're in Iran. Okay, and then we'll start with verse 3. Then I lifted my eyes and I saw, and there, standing beside the river, was a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver him from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. Okay, so Daniel tells us, again, he's using these animals as symbolic symbolism for us. Okay, so he's saying, hey, there's a ram. I saw this ram. There had two horns, okay, in this. Okay, one was higher than the other, which means that one was more dominant than the other. One kingdom of this will be more dominant than the other one. And he said he became great. You know, he went across the Middle East, westward, northward. Remember, we're in Iran, so he went across northward, westward, southward, basically just conquering to conquer. And just like it said, he did according to his will, and he became great. Okay, so that's the first kingdom. Okay, and it's going to consist of two little kingdoms, okay, or one small kingdom and one large kingdom, the ram, because he had two horns. And we'll find out who that is. Okay, in verse 5 it says, and as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Then he came to the ram that had two horns, which I seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with great rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. There was no power within the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver him from his hand. So this tells us that the goat is going to come across once the ram reaches its pinnacle and power, once it fulfills its prophetic calling, okay, there's going to be a goat. And again, he uses symbolism. There's going to be a goat, a country that rises up, that absolutely rages against him, and it's going to be a major, major war in the Middle East, okay? So, and we'll find out who this goat is as we continue. Okay, so right now we have a ram, we have a goat that's going to come and have a cataclysmic war. I mean, it's going to be, obviously from the description here, it's not just going to be a few rockets fired across each one's border. This is going to be an absolute major war that everyone will understand about. Okay, so we'll continue in verse 8. Therefore, the male goat grew great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in his place was four notable horns, which came up towards the four winds of heaven. And out of the horns came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great, and toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. So here we go. Just like we saw in last week in Daniel 7, we see this little horn again. Okay, here's another little horn. Okay, these little horns are the same people. Last week we identified the little horn as the Antichrist. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and put this out there for you guys. So the little horn is the Antichrist in both. Okay, so Daniel 7, Daniel 8, it's the same little horn. Okay, so what this is saying is when this nation becomes great, that its leader is going to die, just like it says, and the large horn was broken, okay, that means he's going to die, and then in the place of it came four horns. So once the nation becomes great, the leader's going to die, and then it's going to break in into four regions, okay? And then the little horn is going to rise from one of those regions to power, okay, just like it says in verse 9. Okay, in verse 10, we'll continue with the description of the vision. And it grew up to the host of heaven and cast it down to some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and then the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth to the ground. He did all this, and he prospered. Okay, this is obviously, I mean, if anyone reads biblical prophecy, this is strictly talking about one person. That is the Antichrist. When you read this, it's very clear. Guess who grows up to heaven? This is Isaiah 14. You can check that out as a reference, Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. Also, Revelation 12, what does it say? He sweeps a third of the stars from heaven, right? His demons, his angels. So this is describing the Antichrist, okay? He exalts himself as the prince of the host, and then he takes away, what, the daily sacrifices, right? So just like Messiah said in Matthew 24, he reverts you back to Daniel and says, when you see the abomination of desolation, this is what it's leaning towards as well. Now, Daniel speaks of the abomination of desolation in Daniel 11, but this is also kind of a hint towards that as well, because he takes away the daily sacrifices and he causes transgression and things like that. This is definitely the Antichrist that he is speaking of. Okay, so again, you can go to Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28, Revelation 12, and it gives you the same characteristics that is speaking of the Antichrist. Okay, so let's go to verse 13. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host that's trampled underfoot? And he said, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. You know, we won't get into those numbers, but I will tell you, we can go through it another time. It'll take a whole session itself. That is a prophecy that will occur. That's a prophecy of Hanukkah. You know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. Most people believe it's a Jewish thing, but actually it's a God thing. And Hanukkah will happen again, okay, just like this says. And I would have to spend another night going through this so it makes total sense. But just like Hanukkah happened in the days of Judas Maccabee and the Maccabeans, it will happen again. Once after Messiah comes back, then the temple will be cleansed at a certain time and that sort of thing. So anyhow, that is the vision. So what we've discovered is there's a ram. That's a kingdom. There's a ram that rises that sweeps across the Middle East, okay, northward, southward, westward. Once he becomes great, then there's a goat that rises up from the west, and he comes at him, and he tramples him, rages at him, and he tramples him underfoot. So it's talking about a major war. It tells us that the goat will win this war, okay, and then once the goat becomes great, Okay, once the second kingdom of this prophecy comes great, then the leader will die. The large horn is broken, just like it said. And then the four regions, it will be split into four regions. So the nation will be split into four regions. And then the little horn will rise from one of the four regions, which is the Antichrist. And it gives us the characteristics as we finish the dream. It gives us the characteristics of the Antichrist quite clearly. Okay, so some biblical scholars and prophecy teachers either believe this is historical, okay, and they believe it's talking about the Medo-Persian Empire, because the Medo-Persia, okay, two horns, Medes, and then Persia. Persia was the last one that came up, the second horn that Daniel's talking about. They believe that this is ancient prophecy because that's what happened. The Medo-Persians rose to power, okay, and once they became great, then the Grecians, or I would say Alexander the Great, okay, everybody should know who that is. Alexander the Great conquered them, and then he died, okay, and then they split into eventually four regions, which was the Seleucid division, Cassander, Lysimus, and Ptolemy. So those are the four regions that Alexander's empire eventually fell into. So most people, when they look at history, they're like, oh, okay, good. Okay, this has already been fulfilled. You know, no reason to explore this prophecy. Okay, and then some people believe that some of it was fulfilled then, and then the rest of it with the Antichrist will be fulfilled, you know, at the end of the age. Okay, so there's your two theories on this. Is they believe, one believes that it's historical, the other one believes that it's historical, and then it bleeds in to the end of the age. So just like with anything, let's go to the interpretation of this, and then it will tell us when this vision is going to occur. Okay, so verse 15. Then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Eli, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. Okay, so there's an angel there, and then he calls out to Gabriel, the angel Gabriel that we're all familiar with. He's just like, hey, Gabriel, make Daniel understand what he just saw, okay, so he can write it down, okay? So it's very important that we understand that. And then this is what he says. So Gabriel came near where I stood, which is Daniel. And when he came, I was afraid and I fell on my face. But he said, I bet. Wouldn't you fall? We would all fall on our face if it was Daniel. I've always, when I read that, it's like, could you imagine, you know, the glory of not only angels, but, you know, in Daniel 9, he saw, you know, the Son of Man, you know, Messiah. So, you know, that's whenever they use that terminology, it always gets my mind just thinking how we would all react if we saw, you know, something as glorious as that. Okay, so he said to me, verse 17, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Okay, so there you go. There's number one. So number one, he says, the vision refers to the time of the end. And then he continues. Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and stood me up upright, and he said, look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be. So, ladies and gentlemen, three times Gabriel told Daniel that this vision is for the end of the age, for the time of the end, for the time of indignation, which we all know is the end of the age, the latter days, which is all eschatological terms for the end of the age. Okay, so this is what I really want everyone to understand, that Daniel ate the entire vision. He didn't say part of it. He didn't say the end of it. He said the vision, all of it, every bit of it, will occur at the end of the age. And next week, we will kind of see where we are in Daniel 8. You know, I'm kind of tipping my hat of where we are, but you'll kind of see where what's evolved, and you'll see the circumstances that's led up to this, you know, and what I believe. So it's very important to understand that Gabriel said three times, and three times is the divine number, okay? It's a perfect number, okay, as far as numerology concerns. So just keep that in mind, that he said three times he told Daniel that this is for the time of the end. Obviously, if people want to put this Medo-Persia and the Grecian Empire with Alexander, that was 2,500 years ago. You know, that was not the time of the end. That runs into a lot of problems with a lot of other timetable prophecies, if you will, if we're saying the time of the end is 2,500 years, you know, from then to now. You know, so again, this prophecy is going to occur at a certain time, which is the end of the age. So I hope you are with me on that. And now we'll continue in verse 20. So here we're going to identify who these people are. Okay, who these empires are. So verse 20, it says, "The ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Medo and Persia," Media and Persia in some Bibles, "and the male goat is the kingdom of Greece." Okay, so again, we do not have to pick and choose and guess who these kingdoms are, who these animals are. Gabriel has told us who they are, and he says, hey, they're the Medo-Persia, just like we've discussed in Daniel 2, in Daniel 7, and now in Daniel 8, okay, the third time. Okay, the second kingdom is Medo-Persia, which is today Iran. Okay, so now, who is Greece? Okay, Greece is a mistranslation in the English Bible. Okay, Greece was not a nation when Daniel wrote this prophecy. I don't think they became a nation until like 1800, somewhere in there. Okay, so Greece is a mistranslation. Okay, it's really the word is Yavan. Okay, J-A-V-A-N, V as in Victor, Yavan. Yavan is a descendant of Noah, and they are Western Turkey. Okay, so Yavan is Western Turkey. If you go to any reputable biblical atlas, it will show you that. If you go to the internet, you're hitting and missing things, okay, with these atlases. But if you go to a reputable biblical atlas, it will tell you Yavan is Western Turkey. Okay, so now we know. So if you're writing these kingdoms down in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, now in Daniel 8, you're seeing a pattern here. Okay, you're seeing a pattern where we've got the second and third kingdom in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 going at it. Okay, they're going to have a major war sometime at the end of the age. Okay, and it aligns perfectly. Okay, remember, Daniel 8 is just speaking of this war between the second and third kingdom. That's what he's speaking of. Okay, so just because he doesn't mention the first kingdom, Babylon, Iraq, that doesn't matter, because this prophecy is just speaking of this war that's about to take place, you know, on God's appointed time here in the future. Okay, so we'll continue. As he continues, he describes them. The ram is Medo-Persia, which is Iran. The male goat is the kingdom of Greece, which Yavan, Turkey. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. Okay, as for the broken horn, and then the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. Okay, so what does that tell us? It tells us, just like we discussed before, once Turkey becomes great, once they smash Iran, once they trample Iran and become great, the leader is going to die. And Daniel says he's the first king. Okay, so he's the first king. He's going to die. It's going to split into four regions or kingdoms or horns. Horns is symbolic for kingdoms. So there's your other four horns of the Antichrist kingdom, okay? Is that and the three in North Africa, Egypt, Libya, and Sudan. Here's four of them. We don't know who they are, but they will be out of the Turkey region, and then the other three we'll just have to see and wait and see what's out. But so this is very important for us to understand that it tells us who they are: Medo-Persia, which is Iran, and then the male goat is the kingdom of Greece, Yavan, Turkey. So Iran and Turkey, and then the male goat, Turkey. Okay, once it becomes the power, the large horn will be broken, okay, and then four regions will come out of it, and it might look something similar to Alexander's four regions, okay, because we have to understand God has given us these prophetic foreshadows of these kingdoms that have happened in the exact order for us to understand how they're going to come about at the end of the age, okay, so they're called prophetic foreshadows. It's not speaking of those, but God has allowed that, just like the Isaiah says, the end will be like the beginning. Just like Solomon says, what has been done will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. You guys, you know, probably all know that verse as well. So the end will be like the beginning. So he's given us these awesome patterns in the past for us to understand so we're not in the dark. Okay, so we do understand what, this is why they wrote it, you know, for us to understand the people who are living at this time, to understand, you know, what is going on and how it's going to go down at the end of the age according to the prophets, okay? So it's just very important to understand. So rewinding this is Turkey's going to become great. The leader will die. He's the first king. Then the four regions will come about, however they will. It could be Cassandra, Lysimus, Ptolemy, and Seleucid, just like Alexander's was. Okay, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. And then the little horn will rise up between one of the four. Okay, so we'll keep reading. 22, as for the broken horn and for the four that stood up in his place, four kingdoms, again, that's four of the ten kings, shall rise out of that nation, but not with its power. And then verse 23, and in the latter time of their indignation, okay, so basically it's telling you again, okay, at the end of the age, when these kingdoms are about again, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall rise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not with his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Obviously, this is speaking of the Antichrist. Verse 25, through his cunning. Okay, who's cunning? Remember Genesis 3:1, it says Satan, you know, he was cunning towards Eve. Okay, so same here. Through his cunning, he indwells the Antichrist. So through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. And he shall exalt himself in his heart. Again, Isaiah 14 through 16, that tells you the same thing. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. That's Messiah. So who does that? That's Antichrist. He rises against him, you know, when he comes for a second coming. Okay? But he shall be broken without human means. Obviously, Messiah will take care of him. Okay? And then the visions of the evenings and the morning, which was told, is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. Again, this is another confirmation. This is for the end of the age. Okay, it takes us back to Daniel 12:4, where it says, "Hey Daniel, seal up your vision to the end of the age." You know, seal it up. That means that no matter me, you, or whoever can read it 2,500 years ago, and it's not what it's talking about. It's sealed up for the end of the age. His whole book is, beside the history of the, you know, lion's den and things like that. You know, but the visions, the dreams, the prophetic nature of his prophet, they're for the end of the age. So Daniel 8 is telling us that there's going to be a war, you know, between Turkey and Iran. I'm going to use their modern names, Turkey and Iran, okay? And we'll read right back through this real quick, like, before we move on to Daniel 9. Let's read this now, since we have this, the ram is Iran, the goat is Turkey. Let's go back to Daniel 8:3, and we'll read right quick through it. Then I lifted my eyes, and I saw there standing by the river was Iran, you know, basically I'm going to put their modern name in there, who had two horns, but one was higher than the other. The Medes were lower, Iran's higher, so we'll just say Iran. I saw Iran pushing westward, northward, and southward, so that no one could withstand him, nor was there anyone that could deliver him from his hand. But Iran did according to their will and became great. Okay, verse 5. And as I was considering, suddenly Turkey came up from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Okay, that's the first king, right? That's the first king that Daniel says. The large horn is the first king in verse 21. Okay, and then what happened? And then he came to the ram with two horns in verse 6, and he saw him coming with confronting him, moved, raged against him, attacked him, and broke his two horns. There was no power in the ram to withstand Turkey, which is Iran and Turkey, but Turkey cast him to the ground, which is Iran, and there was no one that could deliver Iran from Turkey's hand. Okay, and then let's continue. Therefore, Turkey grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, which the leader was broken, and then four regions came up in its place, and out of one of them the little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and toward the glorious land. So it continues to describe the Antichrist, obviously. So this is just telling us again, guys, we know who these people are and these empires are because Gabriel told us who they were. Okay, now we just have to plug them into the symbolism. The ram, Iran, is going to rise to tremendous power, okay, across the Middle East. It's going to sweep across the Middle East. And then Turkey is going to rise up, and there's going to be a major war. Once Turkey wins that war, the leader is going to die. And then four regions will come about, and then the little horn will rise from one of those regions. So the question is, before we move to Daniel 9, is which region is the Antichrist going to rise from? Okay, so let's take a look at verse 9. Okay, and this, we'll go back to verse 8 a little bit. So in its place came four regions, four horns, four kings. Okay, and then out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and toward the glorious land. So if he's going towards the south to begin with, we have to look at our directions now. If we're going towards the south first, he's coming from the north. Okay, symbolically, that means that he's the king of the north, and the division that was the northern kingdom, okay, of the four regions was the Seleucid division. So obviously on a podcast I can't show you this, but if you go to most maps on the internet will take you okay with this, but if you go and you punch in the Seleucid division, S-E-L-E-U-C-I-D, Seleucid division or Alexander's four regions, you'll see where the Seleucid division is, and it's mainly in Turkey and Syria and Iraq, okay, and all the way towards Iran. Okay, so that's called the Seleucid division, and that is where the Antichrist will rise from, is that area, that region, okay, of that. So it tells us through the directions, and then also, if you turn to me to Revelation 2, and we will go to verse 12. Messiah himself confirms who this region is. Okay, so again, we do not have to plug in where these guys come from. We just have to, you know, really read the scriptures, pray about them, meditate on them, kind of figure out, okay, with the directions and also the kingdoms and the regions, where Antichrist is going to rise from. So Antichrist is going to rise from one of those four regions that breaks off into Turkey. It says he's going south. So he's coming from the north. He's called the king of the north in Daniel 11. Symbolically, that means the Seleucid division was the northern division of Alexander's four empires. And now let's take a look at what Messiah himself said in Revelation 2:12. And to the angel in Pergamos write. Okay, so Pergamos is Turkey, okay? It's in Turkey. That's where he's speaking with. Okay, so these things says he who has the sharp two-edged sword, Messiah. I know your works and where you dwell, where Satan's throne is. Okay, it's very important to understand. It says where Satan's throne is. It didn't say where it was, where it has been. It says where it is. Okay, and we'll keep on going. And you hold fast to my name, and you did not deny my faith, even in the days with Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was killed among you, where Satan dwells. Okay, so those two, that phraseology that Messiah said, where Satan's throne is, where Satan dwells. Okay, and then at the end of it, he says it again, you know, that he dwells in there. So, again, are we to argue with Messiah? Absolutely not. He says Satan's throne is in Turkey, and it's where Satan dwells. Obviously, Satan goes to and fro the earth, you know, accusing all of us and causing havoc. Of course so, but Messiah specifically says that he is his throne, where he dwells, is in the nation of Turkey. Okay, so that's just very important to understand that that's according to the prophets, according to Messiah, that's exactly where he will come. Okay, so that is Daniel 8, and hopefully that makes sense to everyone that that's, and next week we'll kind of hit on Daniel 8 some more, and I think it's really going to really give you a paradigm shift with that. Okay, so now Daniel 9:26. Whenever I speak with people about how I view the scriptures with, if you've kept up with this series thus far, you understand that, you know, all these empires are Islamic that we're dealing with. I mean, Babylon today is Islamic, Iraq, Iran, Islamic, Turkey, Islamic. You know, every one of them are Islamic that we're dealing with. And I can make the case that if you go through all the biblical prophets, they're all talking about Islam. You know, back then it wasn't called Islam, but the regions that the people are in today are dominated by really radical Islam when it comes down to it. So whenever I get into these conversations, because the common theory is Rome, 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 you know, through, you know, the past, you know, 70, 80 years, once the Ottoman Empire, you know, fell off, it was Rome, 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 Rome. Okay, so, and the scripture that people go to the most is Daniel 9:26. Whenever I have a conversation, that's one of the few, because there's not many. They go to Daniel 2, and they're like, okay, the two legs of iron. Well, just because there's two legs of iron doesn't mean it's the Roman Empire, okay, with the Eastern and the Western division. Okay, then they go to Daniel 7, same thing. They plug it in. Then Daniel 9:26 is really the one where people get really hung up on. Okay, so let's look at this. Daniel 9:26. So he gives us a riddle, okay, for understanding of a lot of the appointed times with Messiah's first coming and also the second coming. And then in Daniel 9:26, he says this, "And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end of it shall be with a flood until the end of war, desolations are determined." So most people look at this as he's speaking of the Antichrist. The people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the sanctuary and the city. Okay, so most people are like, okay, that's Antichrist. And, you know, I agree with that. It is the Antichrist. But then they're like, okay, well, Chad, you know, Rome, General Titus, he's the one who destroyed the temple and the city. So it's got to be Rome. You know, it's got to be Rome. And, you know, I can see how people look at it that way, because if you just scratch the surface, then yes, it looks clearly that Rome is the people of the prince who is to come. But we need to look at this really carefully. Okay, whenever we look at this prophecy, Daniel 9:26, it says, "And the people of the prince who is to come." Well, you will notice if you've been along these studies these last 3 weeks, that every time Daniel speaks of kingdoms, what does he speak of? Metal components, animals, you know, beasts. He symbolizes what empires are. Okay, and then all of a sudden we get to Daniel 9, and he's like, okay, the people of the prince. So you see, there's a difference in writing there. There's a difference in understanding of, he's trying to make a point to us to really go deep in this, because if it was the Roman Empire, I believe he would have used imagery for it, just like he would have been consistent with his writing, okay, and it would have been, you know, whatever animal, you know, that the Lord wanted him to use. But he said, the people of the prince who is to come. So now we have to go into further study with this, okay, into the history books of some well-established, renowned people that most Christians, most Jewish scholars also respect and use, and they agree with their understanding of those times in the history books. Okay, so we all know that General Titus was the leader whenever Rome destroyed Jerusalem and the temple in AD 70. But who were the actual people? Okay, who were the actual people that was in the work for the Roman Empire, if you will? Okay, so now we're going. I'm going to read you some things from Publius Cornelius Tacitus. Is his name, and he's a well-respected, renowned historian and a Roman Empire expert. You know, he chronicled the specific regions and people that compromised the legions that destroyed Jerusalem and the temple. Okay, so he writes this. And I quote, "Titus Caesar found in Judea three legions, the 5th, the 10th, and the 15th. To these he added the 12th from Syria and some men belonging to the 18th and the 3rd, whom he had withdrawn from Alexandria, which is Egypt. This force was accompanied by a strong contingent of Arabs who hated the Jews with the usual hatred of neighbors. So Tacitus is confirming who the Roman Empire hired during that time. Remember, Titus was was in control of the Eastern Division, okay, which was basically in the Middle East, Turkey and Syria and Lebanon and all that area. So he was in control of that. So for him to build an army, he had to recruit the local people there. So he confirms that the people of the legions primarily consisted of Arabs, okay, which included Syrians, Turks, and Egyptians, okay. And here's the legions, and I'll call them out, and I'll tell you where they were located with the people. Legion 3 was stationed in Syria, which is Islamic. Legion 5 was stationed in Judea at the time, okay. They had a mixture of Arabs and also, you know, before they were exiled, the Jewish people in AD 70. In Legion 10, Syria and Turkey, okay, today they're Islamic. Legion 12, that Syria and Turkey, Asia Minor. Legion 15, Syria. Legion 18, Egypt. Okay, so again, this tells us that he had to hire these local people for them to come up against us. And just like Tacticus said, you know, they hated the Jewish people. You know, there was a strong contingent of Arabs, okay, as far as what I've quoted from him, that he's telling us that the majority of the legions were made up of Arabs, you know, from Turkey, Syria, and Egypt. Also, Flavius Josephus, who is probably one of the most renowned Jewish scholars and historians that most Jewish people and Christians refer to, he also recorded the following about General Titus's recruitment of the people in his legions. He wrote, and I quote, "So Vespasian, who was General Titus's father, Vespasian," he wrote, quote, "So Vespasian sent his son Titus, who came by the land into Syria, where he gathered together the Roman forces with a considerable number from the kings in that neighborhood." So again, he confirms what Tacitus said, that he recruited from the area of Syria. Okay, so again, and here's some other quotes of him that I'll read right quick to you. "The greatest part," this is from Josephus, and I quote, "the greatest part of the Roman garrison was raised out of Syria, and because thus related to the Syrian part, they were ready to assist." Okay. "Also, the king of Arabia sent 1,000 horsemen besides 5,000 footmen." Okay, so he sent 1,000 horsemen and 5,000 footmen, okay, Arabs, "the greatest part of which were archers, so that the whole army, including the auxiliaries sent by the kings, as well as the horsemen and footmen, were all united together, amounted to 60,000. Okay, so Josephus says that they sent 60,000 Arabs to help out with this. Okay, I mean, that's incredible. Okay, and then his last quote, "The multitude of the Arabians and the Syrians cut up those that came as supplements and searched their bellies, nor does it seem to me that any misery befell the Jews that was more terrible than this, since in one night's time about 2,000 of these deserters were thus infected." Okay, so what he's telling us, what Tacitus and Josephus is telling us, that the armies of the Roman empires were not European. They were not Italians. They were not. They were Arabs. They were Arabians, they were Turks, they were Syrians, they were, you know, today's Muslims, if you will. And we got to remember, you know, that's what the regions of those people today are predominantly controlled by Islam. Okay, so, and then the legion that destroyed the temple, and this is an interesting fact for you, the legion that destroyed the temple was the 10th Legion, okay, and it was from Turkey and Syria. How ironic. That's where the Antichrist kingdom is going to rise, in that Turkey, Syria, Iraq area, okay, the Seleucid division. So it tells us that the Legion 10 was specifically from Syria and Turkey, okay, and Josephus also says that the Roman Empire, or I'm sorry, when Titus heard that they were tearing down the temple and burning the temple, that he tried to stop them. He didn't want it torn down. He didn't want the temple destroyed. Again, like we discussed, I believe, in week two or week one, the Roman Empire was not about wiping out civilizations and crushing people. Yes, they went to war to win, but then they wanted you to pay money. Okay, they were all about money, and then you could worship whoever you wanted to worship, and they mixed it all together. It wasn't no big deal to them. So they weren't wanting to destroy that. In fact, Josephus said that Titus was very upset that the temple was destroyed. Okay, so we just have to really understand the mindset of not only the Roman Empire at the time, but also Islam. And like we've discussed before, it wants to crush, it wants to trample, it wants to wipe out civilizations, kind of like what you're seeing with ISIS. That is true Islam, okay? I tell people all the time, it's kind of like Christians who don't read their Bible or they don't go to church or whatever it may be. That's not true Christianity. Same with Islam. Islam has a certain doctrine, and that doctrine is what you're seeing with the fundamentalists, okay? The ISIS, the Al-Qaeda's, the Boko Haram's, that is true Islam. And you're seeing it come into play with Iran. You're seeing it come into play with Turkey, with the national world stage, if you will, with those nations. So, and we'll discover that next week, how we're seeing some of this really come to fruition with not only terror groups, but also nations in the Middle East. Okay, last but not least, before we bring this home, the Hebrew word for the people of the prince, okay, to come, you know, for our final confirmation, we'll explore this. The Hebrew word for the people of the prince is okay, it's A-M. It's like am, but am. Okay? And in English, it is translated a unique or common people, tribes, or kinsmen. Okay? So it's saying that these people are unique. They're together. There is one. Well, assuredly, the Turks, the Syrians, and the Arabs, you know, in general, and the Syrians are not the kinsmen of the Europeans. Okay? I'm not trying to be any kind of way with this. It's just the fact, you know, we all are different cultures, and that's okay. You know, God loves all of us, you know, but they were not the kinsmen of the Turks, the Syrians, and the Egyptians, and the Arabs. You know, they're just two different cultures. So, again, we have to go a little bit deeper in this prophecy to understand the true value of it and what Daniel was clearly saying to us, and it perfectly aligns with that. This is the only verse, Daniel 9:26, that the Roman theorist can come to, because it's the only one that, if you don't look far enough beneath the surface, that kind of makes sense, because it's so bland, the people of the prince, and unless you go deeper in it, people will buy into it. But it does not go, like we've talked before, it's got to match every prophecy, okay? And what I'm telling you, my friends, is this: Babylon, Iraq, Persia, Iran, Turkey, which is Greece, Yvonne, and those three match perfectly with every prophecy. You can go anywhere in the scriptures, okay? Any prophecy of Daniel, any prophecy of Jeremiah, any prophecy of Ezekiel, any 38:39, any one of them, Ezekiel 38:39, any one of them. And then what does Revelation tell us? Like we discussed last week, Revelation 13 says, I saw a beast who was a lion, a leopard, and a bear. He said, there's those three kingdoms. It's those three kingdoms. Okay, the Babylon, Iraq, Persia, Iran, Greece, Turkey, or leopard, you know, lion, leopard, bear. Those three, that's what the Antichrist kingdom is made up of. Okay, nothing else. He didn't mention a fourth kingdom. He said, those three is what I saw, according to Revelation 13. So I hope we understand this going forward. Next week, what we're going to do is explore where we are on God's prophetic timeline. I think with the information that we have so far, Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, Revelation 13, with the information we have thus far, we know this. We know that Iraq's going to rise to power, and then Iran's going to rise to power, and then Turkey's going to rise to power. And then those three will be the conglomerate Antichrist kingdom. So where are we? Where are we on God's prophetic timeline? I believe next week, by the end of the session, we will have a clear understanding of where we are on God's prophetic timeline according to the kingdoms. Now, this is not setting dates, but Messiah told us to watch. He told us to watch these kingdoms. Daniel wrote about these kingdoms in half of his book. So according to the kingdoms, I believe we will be able to identify which kingdom that we are living in today. So I hope this has been helpful, friends. You guys have a safe week. Have a blessed weekend. And as always, may God protect you and bless you tremendously. Take care. We'll see you next week. Thank you.